Idaho Falls and Pocatello PBS affiliate KISU-TV is broadcasting a profound and inspiring story of cancer survival by Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist John Kaplan on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m. Diagnosed at age 48 with a potentially deadly form of lymphoma, Kaplan turned the lens on himself and chronicled his experience in a new film, Not As I Pictured. Not As I Pictured has since won more than 20 honors, including several Best Documentary Film Festival awards. John Kaplan now collaborates with two of the most influential groups in cancer research and cancer advocacy, the American Society of Clinical Oncology and the American Cancer Society. The University of Florida journalism professor and Fulbright scholar has been awarded the Overseas Press Club Award and National Newspaper Photographer of the Year, as well as the Pulitzer. I'm Jen Hawkins, here with John Kaplan. Welcome, John. Please tell us a little about your film.
Hi. Well, my film is autobiographical, and it's not a film I would have ever expected to make. I'd never been sick my whole adult life to speak of. And I was suddenly diagnosed with not one, but two different separate cases of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma coexisting in my body at the same time. So with my background as a photographer and as a storyteller, I never would have thought that I would choose to start to photograph myself. In fact, it's not something that I recommend to my students or to other professionals. But for me, the process of doing pictures and eventually video was at first purely a way to cope with my fear. And then I realized very early on that if I were able to go into remission, and of course I hoped and prayed that I would, I really believed that the work I was doing could truly help other families coping with a cancer diagnosis as well.
Yes, you've spoken before about initially making the images in Not As I Pictured as an outlet, a way to process your fear. At what point did you begin to think of these images in terms of a cohesive project that might help others?
Pretty early on. You know, it's ironic. I started sort of editing the work, and during my chemotherapy, I would have okay energy early in the morning, and it would wane bit by bit, and then by mid-afternoon, I'd pretty much be in bed the rest of the day. But the process of thinking about how I could take pictures in a way that didn't distract me from the far more important goal of doing what my doctors told me to do to get well, that process really did put some new growth into a time that was all about fear and coping and, you know, not trying to scare my young children. You know,
yes.
I wanted them to believe then and now. Karina was 4 at the time and Max was 2. You know, when kids are that age, they need to believe that daddy's going to be there now and in the future.
Sure. Yeah. Now, some of the most compelling images in the documentary are those of your wife and children. Did you have any difficulty documenting them at such a vulnerable time for your whole family?
No, I mean, the scenes that include the children are very upbeat, life-affirming. Your doctors will tell you, you know, try to just go about your normal life as you're going through chemo. And, of course, much more easily said than done.
Sure.
But having those, you know, foundational experiences that were so wonderful before a cancer diagnosis and to be able to try to continue them really makes you realize, gee, you know, why do I want to fight this thing? What do I want to live for?
Yeah.
And so for so many people, family comes at the top of that list, and perhaps faith does as well. So the experiences with the kids are situations such as, you know, cathartic blueberry picking with the family, blowing bubbles, things like that. And even now, you know, my children, at the time they knew daddy had boo-boos. He was in what they called the hostable to try to make his boo-boos better. Then they knew I made a movie about my boo-boos that would try to help other people with boo-boos too. And at this point, they're just a little bit older. I just introduced the word cancer to them for the first time this summer.
Mm.
And they understand that it's a film and it's really helping people out there. But they have not seen. They're now 7 and 5. I don't think it's age appropriate.
Sure.
For maybe children younger than 10.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, now, Not As I Pictured has been universally commended and won a myriad of awards for being so upbeat and life-affirming and inspirational. Did you always envision it that way, or in the throes of your illness, was it not difficult at times to maintain that tone?
Well, you know, I would never candy coat it.
Yeah.
And in my experience as a photojournalist, a writer, consultant to, you know, all sorts of publications, I always encourage doing work that matters, work that has intimacy and emotion. And yet, when it is putting yourself in that situation, you don't really know if you'll hold back or whether you'll, you know, one thing, for example, I always say to my subjects in my work is, in exchange for your time and your trust, I promise not to exploit you.
Yes.
And I don't say that as some kind of sales pitch. I really mean it. So in documenting myself, I learned after a short time that I had nothing to feel guilty about. You know, we don't ask to be sick, but we didn't do anything wrong. So I truly didn't mind seeing myself and showing myself at those times of vulnerability and you know, physically not looking my best. My wife, Lee, of course, was my caregiver and has been just such an incredible, you know, rock of support then and now.
Yeah. And it's interesting you bring this up. I was wondering if you believe photography does have an ethical dimension, and specifically, how do photographers avoid or take care not to be exploitative?
Well, so much so. I think not just photography, but journalism in general. And it can often get a bad rap, sometimes deserved and more often not deserved. But I've been so driven by these topics that 4 years ago, even before I became ill, I began something here at the University of Florida called the Media Initiative for Social Responsibility. And that's basically that, you know, the press needs to be more accountable to doing stories not about escapism or titillation, the latest bit of celebrity worship. It's not that a little bit of that isn't fine, but when that crowds out the true issues of the day, I think, you know, the very nature of our democracy is threatened. So lo and behold, I began doing projects about medical awareness and different areas, including type 1 diabetes, and who would have believed that I would fall into being a pilot project for my own initiative?
Sure.
And that's the way it worked out.
Wow. Yeah. Now, many of your works prior to your diagnosis seemed to me, anyway, to be very stark, very arresting, but also very composed. And I noticed many of the images in Not As I Pictured, no doubt in large part due to necessity, are more incidental or even erratic. Has your work in Not As I Pictured changed your sense of aesthetics or process at all?
Well, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I knew the most important thing was to be doing exactly what my doctors told me to do.
Yes.
And I truly believe, and studies actually show, that your belief system and your ability to want to fight it can play into your sense of getting into remission or not having a recurrence of cancer, because stress has been found to affect those things. But at the same time, even though, you know, the major point of my film is, you know, believe you can beat it, and it's life-affirming, positive quality, universally has viewers feeling better at the film, better at the end of the film. But having said that, the most important thing was to do what my doctors told me to do and try to get well. So I needed to remember that this process of making the film couldn't overwhelm that. So, you know, I couldn't bring in camera crews or didn't want to light things, you know, in a maybe overdone way. And so it is a kind of a seat-of-the-pants project, but it really brings people inside the experience of what our family was going through. And it's also being used and will be used in the future to a greater degree in medical humanities education, too. Medical students that watch the film, for example, tell us that it truly helps them want to become more empathetic doctors.
Wow. That's wonderful. What led to your decision to create a full-length feature, including video, and do you plan on more multimedia projects in the future?
Well, you know, I knew that this project could help people, and I hoped and prayed I'd go into remission. I didn't know if I would or not. I wonder if I could have completed the movie if the news hadn't been positive. But we're giving away 10,000 free copies online. People can either go to lovekillscancer.org or notasipictured.org. There's no catch. If you or a family member or friend is touched by cancer, you're eligible to get one free copy for personal use. Now, organizations, you know, such as hospitals and medical practices, they do pay a license fee for the film for their professional use. But I've been so driven by how this film could help people,
yes,
that, you know, when you ask about future projects, I feel we're really just beginning. We have 6,000 copies still to give away. The word is still getting out about our humanitarian program. And I'm happy to report that we're partnering with the two most important cancer organizations worldwide, being ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology. That's the group that your doctor would belong to, or other health professionals.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that break all the major cancer research every year. And also one of our underwriters is the American Cancer Society as well.
And you mentioned anyone affected by cancer is welcome to receive a copy, and you've mentioned elsewhere that includes virtually everyone, correct?
Well, you know, it's a sad but true statistic that in this country, one in three women will get cancer at some point in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. And for men, it's one in two. So that means virtually every family is affected by it. And I do want to say to your listeners that, you know, you might say to yourself consciously or subconsciously, gee, why would I want to, you know, stick a disc in the DVD or watch on PBS or watch this poor sick guy for, you know, for an hour? What's in it for me? That doesn't sound very good. But again, people universally feel better after watching this film. It doesn't candy coat anything, but it really makes you think not about John Kaplan and his family story, but, you know, why do I want to fight it? You know, what am I living for? What do we value most in life? And in that way, it is so life-affirming, positive, and it gives you just that small nugget of courage that you can get back to health and the joy of every day.
Nice. And how did you get musicians like Michael Stipe of R.E.M. and David Bowie and Will.i.am and even Mother Teresa involved in this project?
Well, sheer will. Mother Teresa is incidentally in the film, but she passed away long before I was diagnosed with cancer.
Okay,
so I won't give away the film, but Mother Teresa, yes, does make a cameo. In terms of the rock stars that got involved, I made the mistake of getting emotionally attached to a song that Michael Stipe of R.E.M. was performing with Coldplay that I'd seen on Austin City Limits in the middle of my treatment. And people far more expert than me said, you know, John, you don't want to go there. You cannot license music of that caliber. You can't afford it. You'll get stuck in bureaucracy. Don't even try. But through this process, you know, when I began to make a film, I had zero budget. I knew somehow it would come together. Mm-hmm. And we eventually raised some money that allows for our humanitarian educational goals. And the same thing with music. When, you know, musicians learned what we were doing and how music was such a powerful part of, you know, my will to survive, they all jumped on the bandwagon. And I'd say particularly R.E.M. has been a major friend of the project. They helped secure the rights from other folks like Will.i.am and the Black Eyed Peas, certainly Chris Martin of Coldplay, Justin Timberlake, and, you know, the list goes on. David Bowie has also donated music to us.
Wow. Expanding a little bit beyond Not As I Pictured, what first drew you to photography? Did you want to make something beautiful? Did you want to bear witness?
Well, I'd like to say yes, but the truth is I was a rebellious teenager in my hometown of Wilmington, Delaware. My mom was the arts critic, so to keep me out of trouble on Saturday morning, she started bringing me down to the newspaper. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but they were probably the best photography newspaper staff in the country at that time. Two of their photographers went to National Geographic. A couple won the National Photographer of the Year, which is an award that I was later fortunate to win as well. So mm-hmm. if you're around good people, you know, who also have a big heart, great things can happen. And I think that's also been at my core to become an educator, you know, to give something back, you know, to certainly to my students, but also in this process of this very unexpected film, to know that I am just compelled to find the will to get it out there, to let people know how helpful it could be, and to give it away.
Yeah. Now, you won the Pulitzer Prize for your photo essay, 21, and your photographs of torture victims in West Africa are absolutely harrowing. How do you establish trust? How do you achieve such intimacy with your subjects?
Well, I will say that, you know, you mentioned the torture project. That was probably the proudest moment of my career when the UN asked if they could use my work as part of the War Crimes Tribunal. Mm-hmm. Usually a journalist, you know, would never cut a deal like that because you don't want to be compromised on one side or the other of an issue. But when it's something as clear-cut as torture, there aren't two sides of the issue. There's a right side and a horrific side. Mm. And for me, it was an honor to be part of trying to bring justice to those who felt so powerless in West Africa. So I try to look for projects that are underreported, that are human rights-based, and, you know, that in some way can, you know, can better society.
So photojournalism has changed a great deal since the advent of the Internet. How do you as a professor prepare your students for an uncertain future?
What is this Internet you're talking about? I'm hearing about that. Well, you know, it's funny. You know, the web is potentially the ultimate visual medium. And yet, you know, at this early stage, you know, less than 15 years into its development, I would say that a lot of mistakes are being made, and photography and video are actually being used quite poorly with little impact. Mm. Imagine picking up the front page of your newspaper and seeing 300 stories. Well, you're essentially seeing 300 little baby links on the splash page of most websites. So I think that the glory days of communicating great journalism, whether it's writing or photography or video, whatever it might be, on the web, are still to come. So I try to also empower my students to believe that, you know, they can be on the vanguard of a whole new era of communication. Times are tough, budgets are tight, but if we don't have a thriving press, we don't have a democracy.
Very well said. You spoke a little bit about this already, but how has your perspective about photography changed since you turned the camera on yourself?
Well, thank God for autofocus. If I didn't have autofocus, I wouldn't have been able to point the camera backwards at myself doing this thing. You know, often I held my arm out and, you know, kind of took snapshots. I think they're a little more than that. But other times I would set up a remote trigger. But in terms of, you know, how it has affected my view of photography, I think that, you know, by making things real, we really bring balance to society. You can't just poke your camera at, you know, the worst things that are happening, the most negative things happening in a community. But we have a responsibility to not only show the positive things, but to show the things that really truly do need to change. And I think we are in a dangerous point right now in our culture where if everything is looked at as let's be sure this doesn't offend, let's be sure that this won't hurt our ability to attract advertisers, when everything is judged on a barometer of purely market research and demographics, then you're forgetting your true responsibility in a free society. And that's to, as I say in the goals of the Media Initiative for Social Responsibility, to inform, to inspire, to heal. So I believe that in this century, the best journalism needs to be solutions-oriented as well.
Wow. What's next?
People ask me that question, and for me, what's next would be our goals to reach out with the film to medical professionals. It's seen as a great vehicle to teach a very important concept of humanism in medicine. It's also called medical humanism. And that's basically to teach medical professionals of all different types that you're not just dealing with a chart or a case, you're dealing with a real human being with certainly hopes and fears, and someone that, you know, is going through a very thoughtful and potentially difficult time as medical, you know, interventions of various types are happening. It's a very important movement now in medical education, and so we're going to be looking at ways to reach out to the medical community so the film can be used to teach future doctors and other medical professionals to be more caring, to be more empathetic, and that's not just an idea of mine. It's a very important movement happening now.
Wow. Well, John Kaplan, it has been an honor to speak to you. I truly appreciate your words, and we'll all look forward to the film.
Well, thank you, Jen, and if people can't see the broadcast, I encourage them to go to our website. We have great educational resources there as well through the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Once again, it's lovekillscancer.org or notasipictured.org. We're also developing a wonderful online community on Facebook where people share their feelings about the film, and that's facebook.com/notasipictured with a D.
Thank you again, John Kaplan.
My pleasure, Jen. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks. Again, John Kaplan's Not As I Pictured is playing on KISU-TV, our Idaho Falls and Pocatello PBS affiliate, on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m.